more of what the previous question was about. So, for instance, in Los Angeles, there have been restrictions in place in 2009, limiting water to 3 days a week and setting a, you know, a schedule of fines. So does this override those, or, I mean, does Los Angeles have to restrict its watering to 2 days a week, or does this say, you know, you've got something in place, that's fine, it's basically comparable to what we want?
Does it supplement what they're doing? I'd have to double-check it to be sure, but my guess is they are in the stage where they have outdoor irrigation requirements. So in terms of the requirements that we're putting on at the agency level, my guess, don't hold me to, my guess is LA is fine. It's been doing this for a while, but the individual prohibitions would supplement their authority, and they could enforce those as well.
Okay, forgive me. I'm still a little confused. LA does have mandatory restrictions in place. They have had them in place since 2009. What they say is you cannot water your lawn more than, or outdoors more than 3 days a week on specified days for more than a certain period of time.
Right.
So your regulation says 2 days a week. So does LA have to change to?
No, that's actually not how it works. If you don't already have a drought plan in place where you're regulating outdoor irrigation, then our fallback option is 2 days a week. LA already has mandatory, and so we wouldn't be supplanting it at the agency level. And the individual prohibitions that are a part of this would just supplement, and they could enforce those, as could we. So we wouldn't be substituting our judgment for Los Angeles, because what we're saying essentially to agencies is if you have a plan, you need it to be escalated where you have mandatory outdoor irrigation requirements. LA already has them, so it doesn't have to worry about enforcement against it, but it could. Fellow Californians are in.
And if these are adopted next week, would this be the first time in state history that we have statewide water rules?
Well, we've done some water conservation rules in the past. I believe it's the first time that we'd be doing them on this scale across the state under emergency regulation authority. But we're digging into the boxes from 77 to see if we can refine that answer a little bit.
Okay, operator, we're ready for the next question.
The next question comes from Rob McMillan. Your line is now open.
I have a question about enforcement, kind of follow-up to the first couple. For example.
Up the regulations, would that include like mandatory restrictions on all water use, or what else would the board consider at that stage?
Well, one step at a time. I would say the answers to your questions are no and yes, and that is this enough? No. This is enough for a start to establish, I think, again, it's a proposal to start the conversation and to bring us up to the least that people should do. I think it's prudent to take the long view and assume that it's not going to rain next year and that it's not going to rain the year after that. If you look at what happened in Australia and what might happen here and you go back to before we recorded every year, there's tree ring evidence of 100 and 400 year droughts in California history. And so you can't count on being bailed out. And so Californians should do far more, particularly in outdoor irrigation, and still do more indoors. and we're encouraging people to do more. But this is our starting effort to get this on deck and to raise the floor. If it doesn't rain later this fall, we certainly will consider more stringent measures. But we'll wait and see also what communities do, because I'm kind of, bad metaphor, a glass half full kind of person, and I think people will rise to the occasion. We just need to ring the bell and to direct them to resources and to encourage local water agencies to amp up their game, which they are clearly capable of doing.
And just to follow up, if I could get at least some sense of what some of those more stringent measures might include, can you outline what the board might consider? Or I realize it's speculative at this point, but what could happen if this doesn't do the trick, or if the rains don't come?
We might try to do more about leaks. I mean, if you look at our materials, you'll see we have a lot of things we are encouraging people to do. We're not mandating that they do yet. You know, leaks can be 10% of more or more of water use. That's in part why we're even using California in the budget. Even we're using some cap and trade dollars to deal with leaks. It wastes energy that's embedded in water. It also wastes water. We might talk about that more. We might go to more stringent landscape scale. We might encourage drought rates and other things. There are a few places we have not yet tread here.
Thank you.
The next question is from Gus Thompson with the Auburn Journal. Your line is now open.
Hi, it's Gus Thompson with the Auburn Journal. And you mentioned ringing the bell. What communities out there are causing the most problems, or agencies for that matter? What are the ones that aren't really doing anything that you mentioned, or doing too little in your mind?
I don't have a bad list in front of me. We're just trying to encourage everybody to do more. I don't have a list of agencies to spank here. It's just that we know that there are a number of agencies that are going above and beyond and doing a lot, and we actually want more agencies to do more. We're sending a message that California is in a state of crisis. We are focusing here on outdoor residential irrigation, because we see that as an arena where, again, 30 to 80% of scarce potable water is being applied, and it could be applied more judiciously. You know, many communities are even doing lawn buyouts to help people with the cost of converting from a water-thirsty lawn to beautiful ornamental landscaping. People have done it in Las Vegas quite rapidly and successfully. We're a Mediterranean climate in much of California, and we could do better. But they're trying to help their residents make that transition. If people can afford it, they ought to be doing it. If they can afford to retrofit all their appliances, which are getting more and more efficient, they should do that. Many communities also go out and will go and do indoor toilet, shower, other appliance retrofits. Those communities are to be applauded because they understand the value of saving water. But then there's, you know, a whole host of things people can do, from not running a dishwasher until it's full to, you know, people all over California are showering with buckets and then using the water to water their plants. I mean, there's a lot of ingenuity that you can apply. But as we look at where an awful lot of precious potable water is going, it's going to water outdoor plants beyond what they even need. And so that seemed like a good place to start if we were talking about statewide regulations. Again, regulations are a minimum threshold. They are not the route to the promised land.
Would you be developing a list as things move on, as perhaps the next step to, as you mentioned, you know?
Well, I'm not as into shaming as many others, but I know that, I'm sure there are people who know what that list would be. Yeah, when we get the reports in, we'll have more of a sense of how people are doing. I mean, the per capita water use varies widely across California. So if you look to, for example, if you look to the city of San Francisco, which doesn't have much in the way of outdoor lawns, their per capita water use is lower than many other communities that have large lawns. That doesn't mean all lawns are terrible, but there are many lawns that are just purely ornamental and not serving a function, and we really want to say, at the very, very least, for heaven's sake, do not overwater your lawn.
Okay, operator, I think we're ready for another question.
The next question comes from Tony Gwinier with NBC4LA. Your line is now open.
Yep, Tony from NBC4, and luckily all of the enforcement questions have been answered, and that's what I had a question on, so pass on me. Thank you.
The next question is from Mary Callahan with Press Democrat Newspaper. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Let me try to formulate a decent question here. First of all, I'm a little bit confused, and forgive me if I'm slow, about the degree to which those districts that already have mandatory plans need to make those mandatory plans match the minimum levels that are being proposed here.
Oh, no. I mean, there are two different sets of things. That's a very fair question. We've done a couple of things. We've done individual prohibitions, and then we have done things for agencies. And for agencies, the core requirement is that if they have a drought contingency plan, they need to amp it up to the stage at which they have mandatory outdoor irrigation rules, whatever those are. If they have them, great.
We even if they don't meet the threshold, the exact, even
no.
If they're not precisely.
No. And the other things are fallbacks for if they don't have a plan or they have an inadequate plan. But even there, we say you could come up with an equivalent. The point here is that all agencies should have something going on about limiting outdoor irrigation. That's the bottom line, really.
Okay. And then my other question has to do with the fact that some of these are, that we're talking here about mandatory conservation measures,
mm-hmm.
But sort of leaving the discretion to the districts as to whether to enforce them or how to enforce them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not clear to me how that helps the situation where we're saying that some communities are doing a lot and other communities are not, if they are still quite a bit of flexibility in terms of how to impose those regulations or regulations
right.
in general.
Well, I think to a certain extent we're trying to take a light touch in respect to the expertise and knowledge of local water agencies that this initial shot, we and our regional boards are also capable of enforcing. Some of these other agencies are capable of it, and I think we're at least at the proposal stage, and I suspect we'll hear about this at our hearing next week. We're trying to take the lightest touch we can to get the point across and give local agencies more tools in addition to giving direction to the public about what we as members of the community that is California really ought to be doing to help our fellows. As I may have said earlier, but I've been saying a lot this week, I do think that having a dirty car, a semi-dirty car, and a browning lawn deserves a badge of honor because it shows that you're aware of and care about your community. So a lot of this is about sending a message.
Okay.
Our next call is from Lorraine Herman with KNX News Radio in Los Angeles. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. It's Lorraine Herman, KNX in Los Angeles. And getting back onto this in a little bit on enforcement, what I hear is a lot of voluntary and neighbors reporting on neighbors, self-reporting by agencies. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about that? I just don't understand how it's going to be really enforced and how you get the message across to people that there really is a problem. I mean, I turn on the tap and there's plenty of water. And how do you get that message across?
Well, we're hoping you all will help us with that, which is why I keep talking about how bad the drought is. I feel like Debbie Downer everywhere. But it really is bad. And, I know I and my colleagues have the opportunity of seeing how bad it is across California, which is difficult for folks who are far from their water sources to understand. And so in many respects, we are relying on you all to help spread the word. We have encouraged agencies to get the messaging out. Some agencies are doing an excellent job, but it does require repeat messaging. I do remember the drought of the 70s, and I still have miniature billboards from that time that I got. And I think that it really does require all of us as a community to keep reminding people of how serious this is and that we're all in this together. In some ways, proposing the regulations helps get the word out. Our hearing next week will help get the word out, and then giving local agencies a few more tools in the arsenal to use will hopefully help them. We have had some water agencies who said us doing something will help them as well, either with their own resolve or by giving them some company that we're all in this together.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Hunter Swartz with The Washington Post. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I was wondering how much authority the board is granted to escalate this if things weren't to get any worse, if things were to get worse.
Well, there's not a limit on our authority. We could in fact do more. We're hoping that folks will do more. There's a water code provision that the legislature gave us for the duration of the drought that gives us the authority to adopt emergency regulations. The governor gave us the authority in his executive order to do it for this or any other related issue. We've used our emergency authority to do rapidly do a general permit to advance recycled water use for outdoor irrigation and agriculture that we did last month. We've also given low-cost financing to agencies to try and accelerate that supplemental source. And so I think it's as limited as our creativity and our prudence. Again, statewide regulations are not undertaken lightly. That's why what we're proposing here as an opening salvo is the bare minimum that we feel everyone should do. But we are continuing to encourage local agencies to do far more. And they're closer to the public and closer to the work. I mean, again, as I said earlier, having worked in local government years ago in Los Angeles, you know, we're in some ways we are the victims of our own success because we've done such a good job delivering water out the tap that people don't recognize how far away it comes from or how much it took to purify it to the state that it can come out the tap and you can drink it without fear. And so part of the challenge during the drought is to say that we should all be thinking much more carefully about how we use that precious resource. And even if you're just thinking of your own community self-interest, you should try and conserve to preserve those reserves as long as possible in the event that we don't get rain and snow the next year or the year after, which could definitely happen. And if it does rain and everybody thinks we're being grumpy now, fine, I'll take it. Call me whatever name. If it doesn't rain, we'll be happy that we did this and perhaps we'll do more.
The next question is from Deborah Kahn with Greenwire. Your line is now open.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi, thanks. I was hoping, the question's kind of amorphous, but I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about the motivation because you're talking about the potential for continuing drought next year and that this will help us prepare for it. But the governor requested a 20% voluntary cut, and then your survey showed that people only reduced 5%, right? So what has that done? And if people don't reduce more, are we going to be in more dire straits right now or just next year?
Well, that really depends on the community. Every community has a different amount. There are some communities that have a lot of supply for a couple of years or more. There are other communities that don't have quite that much. I mean, we have communities that are on a 120-day watch who are at risk of running out of water. So it's as varied as the communities of California. The governor called for a 20% reduction. You know, some people have answered the call. Others, not so much. I think in some cases people were understandably proud of the millions or billions of dollars their ratepayers had spent to build storage facilities or to implement recycling or do all sorts of good things, and they're to be applauded for that. But it sent a mixed message about how safe we all are. I think what we're saying is that you can hope for rain, but that's not a strategy when we know from our experience historically, but also from the Australians' experience, that this drought could last much longer, and it's prudent to take measures now. And so this proposal is sort of the minimum amount for an opening shot at the statewide level. Studies do show that mandatory restrictions are more effective than voluntary restrictions, and so that's why we're treading this way.
Okay. And thanks. And then also I had a follow-up question, because you mentioned that people were kind of resting on their laurels, having spent all that money on extra storage. But are there any other reasons that people might not have reduced water usage when the governor asked? Is it because governments don't really want to be the bad guy and order reductions, or why wouldn't people have done that?
Well, yeah, it could be. I mean, sometimes in each community there could be a difference in political will, or there could be other things that they are trying to do. In some cases, really, there are communities that have been conserving for 20 years. There are other communities that haven't been, and so it's easier for the ones who haven't been to get bigger percentages faster. Some folks told us that part of the challenge in the beginning of this year was that it was a very dry year and that the preceding years were wetter. If the year is wetter, people don't feel the need to water their lawns as much. And so there was an understandable uptick in water use as people were still focusing on watering their lawns. Again, it's part of why we're focusing on outdoor irrigation, because it is such a huge percentage of water use in residential California, and it is the place where people can cut back with the least amount of harm. As I've said many times, again, this is anecdotal, but experts in the field say it, you know, people frequently think more is better, and they will keep watering their lawns, and instead they're actually watering the 3 feet below their lawn, which doesn't help anybody. And so at a minimum, we're trying to make the point that you should not be overwatering your lawn when other people's fields are going fallow and communities are running out of water.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Operator, we're ready for another question.
Our next question is from Alex Breitler with the Stockton Record. Your line is now open.
Hi, folks. Hey, just real quick, you were talking about how cities basically will need to escalate their drought plans to include some kind of mandatory outdoor irrigation restriction.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an example, here in Stockton, we do have a water conservation ordinance that restricts watering based on time of day.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's a routine measure that's in place every summer. I mean, there's nothing extraordinary about it. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that would be sufficient to comply with the regulation, even though it's routine?
It might be. It depends on what's in their drought contingency plans. A large California agencies, the vast majority of them have drought contingency plans with different stages. They're called urban water management plans. And so in deference to local wisdom about what makes sense in their communities, that's why we've suggested that they just at least go to the stage at which they're dealing with outdoor irrigation. In warm places like Stockton, time of day watering can actually save quite a bit of water in terms of evapotranspiration, and so it may be enough. I don't know. We'd have to look at it. I'm sure we'll have some discussion about it, but it may technically meet the letter of what we're saying.
Okay.
I don't know.
And then really quick, if I could follow up, I think I saw in here the projection is for about 500,000 acre feet in total savings from this regulation. Is it fair to say, though, that achieving that number would depend on local agencies being willing to enforce this, or do you think the education component alone would? I guess I'm curious where that number comes from.
I think
from.
It's both. I mean, I think to a certain extent, you know, I'm sorry, this is me going back to law school days, but, you know, regulations are the sort of a minimal social construct of what we, you know, believe we all should do together. I do remain a firm believer that people want to help their communities, and they think even more broadly than their communities. So we're hoping that a combination of enforcement but also the messaging will help yield more water. And again, we and the SaveOurWater.com site and water agencies across the state are definitely encouraging people to do far more. And there are places all around the state where people are stepping up to help their fellow citizens, whether it's loaning them water or running pipe or I believe in the better angels of our natures and people stepping up. And then as a last resort, worry about your own self-interest in running out of water in the next if it doesn't rain next year. You know, there's interesting. I mean, I can't tell you how to do your business. You're the professionals. But there were an awful lot of stories about El Nino that got people thinking that all of a sudden El Nino was coming and that we would all be saved by El Nino. And there haven't been anywhere near as many stories about the subsequent information that said, A, even if it's an El Nino, it's just as likely to be dry as wet, and two, that it's more likely to be a moderate El Nino. So you do have people out there who really think it's going to rain this fall, so why are we worrying about that? And hoping for rain this fall is not a strategy. I like to say it's like buying a lottery ticket and confusing it with a retirement plan. So it's just important to get the message out that it could be much worse and that there are relatively easy things that people could do to make it better.
But enforcement would be a part of that 500,000 acre feet projection. I mean, that does play.
Yes, and we anticipate that many agencies will, in fact, add this into their enforcement repertoire.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Tim Herden with the Capital Press. Your line is now open.
Hey, Tim.
Hi, thank you for taking the time. And I'm just kind of looking at the contrast. Recently, you had, you sent curtailment notices to, I think it was 8,000 water rights holders throughout the valleys. And you got, I think it was 31% compliance or mm-hmm. apparent compliance. And so last week, you passed an emergency regulation that was more stringent, basically saying do it now or else.
Mm-hmm.
With this, I'm hearing a lot more of shoulds than shalls, and mm-hmm. you say you don't want to spank people and you want to take a light touch. Are you concerned that, and there's some confusion as to how it's going to be enforced and where, are you concerned that in a month or two you may be forced to come back with similar more stringent regulations because not very many people or communities are taking part? And if that's the case, why not pass the more stringent regulations now?
Well, it's an interesting question, Tim. I think there are two different things. You know, as you know and some of the others probably don't, we are charged under the Water Code. Core of what we do is manage the water rights system, which is a long-established, pretty tough system of seniority. And it's part of our mission to curtail juniors in favor of seniors and to take enforcement action. We did those regulations last time to try and amp up our ability to enforce. We take that mission very seriously. It is something that we're charged with, and we do in these times, and everybody looks at us to do. It's part of what's motivating us, given that we know the cutbacks in agriculture are so significant, to take a look at urban outdoor water use. But because we haven't done it this way before, and because there are local agencies that actually do an excellent job of this around the state, we felt that it was better as a proposal in our opening foray to take this this approach. It, as I said, this is the minimum standard, and we think everybody should do much more, and we're encouraging people to do more. But we felt at a minimum this was an important start, and we will come back to revisit it if we don't see results. But we're optimistic that we will, so that urban California is sharing in preparation for the drought.
Yeah, my follow-up question is the governor, I think it was January when the governor issued his emergency proclamation. We're now in July. Why did it take as long as it has to issue these guidelines or regs for urban folks when ag has been dealing with this all spring?
Well, I think it's all been coming in waves. We also have been watching closely as many urban areas have, in fact, been stepping up and doing a lot. And in April, when the governor asked us to do a survey of how things were going and gave us the authority to do these kinds of emergency regulations, we got on it, did our survey, looked at it, held a couple of public meetings to get a sense of what the experts thought, and then we made this proposal based on what we heard. So it's actually relatively recent. The governor's call in January was for voluntary compliance. What we've been working on since the end of April was the notion of mandatory compliance, which are two different things.
Okay. Thanks.
Our next question is from Mike Dunbar with the Modesto Bee. Your line is now open.
Thank you. These are necessary and common sense rules or measures, but here in the Valley, almost all of our cities get all or most of their water from groundwater, which the state does not regulate. Can you explain how conserving how our conserving water is going to help in this emergency?
Well, two things, and I'll look to my colleagues if they have others. To the extent that communities conserve whatever their water sources are, whether they're in storage or in groundwater, will last longer. So it's an insurance policy against a drought that goes on longer and longer. And so it's just out of self-interest. The more one can conserve, the more secure one's community will be. Also, the more secure urban communities are, the more flexibility there is in the system to either help other urban communities or agriculture. And so, in particular, I would hope that urban communities that are close to agriculture and can see the pain and suffering that is happening in the agricultural community will step up, first and foremost, in solidarity with their agricultural colleagues.
Okay.
So whether you're being a part of the community that's California or you're just in self-interest, conservation makes sense.
And you mentioned that you don't have a bad list. Would it be more helpful to have a good list, some of the communities that are doing this extremely well already?
Yeah, I think we should put together a good list. We had a number of communities testify in front of us. I mean, it's hard to, and people were joking about it, it's kind of hard to invite people to come and talk at a workshop and tell us how bad you are. I mean, that really doesn't work out all that well. But we should go out and highlight it. I would commend to you on the AQUA website, the Association of California Water Agencies. They do have a document which is a narrative summary of the types of measures that water agencies are doing across the state. It's pretty inspiring. It doesn't have the granular percentages of water savings achieved, but I'll take that as a good suggestion for us to put out a water hero list. That being said, even communities that are doing a lot in terms of mandatory and voluntary could and should do more.
Operator, we're kind of running against our timeline here. We had scheduled about an hour, so I think we have time for perhaps two more questions.
There's only one more question in queue, sir, and that question is from Glenda Anderson with the Press Democrat. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. It's kind of only, I don't know if it's exactly related to this, but does where would commercial uses like trucks for road work using water for dust control, they typically take it from urban water sources, but I'm not sure where it would fall. They're not exactly residential.
Yeah, it just really depends. It'd be worth asking some local water agencies. Presumably there are agencies that do have both voluntary and mandatory conservation measures that address it. But I do not know the answer.
Okay. Yeah, because I was thinking Caltrans uses quite a bit of that when they're doing highway work. Is there any move at all to try to get those that kind of use to be utilizing recycled water instead?
Caltrans actually uses a tremendous amount of recycled water already. I mean, they one of the things we're hoping to do is put more signage up and also detail a number of the things that state agencies are doing. In addition to not watering lawns or having ornamental fountains on, I understand that Caltrans has actually done quite a bit, but
okay.
We should get that out there. They actually have done quite a bit, and they are big users of recycled water. One of the things that we're advising communities to do, of course, is to put signage up where they are using recycled water or gray water so that people do understand that if they see a fountain going or they see landscape irrigation happening, that it's not being done with potable water.
Thank you.
Glenda, thank you very much. That was actually a very, very good question.
Good question.
We get a lot of questions about sister agencies and their use of water. I just wanted to share with the reporters on the line that this media availability should be available in about an hour and a half, 2 hours or so on our web. I will kick this out to the media list so you guys have a link to it in case you want to refresh your memory and listen again. You've also brought up some good points related to enforcement, and I'll be working with my peers here maybe to clarify some of that. I think there's some good questions here. I suspect it's going to be something that's going to be discussed at the hearing on July 15th. And the other thing I want to share with folks is we have a lot of resources on our website. That's www.waterboards.ca.gov. For those of you that are out of the area, we do simulcast or live stream our board meetings. If you aren't familiar with our website, if you were looking at it, if you look at the About tab and you hit that, you'll see a drop-down menu and you will see a thing that says Board Broadcasts. You should see it already scheduled for next Tuesday, the 15th. It'll be the State Water Resources Control Board, likely in the Coastal Room. Go ahead and make sure that you get on then. And I usually am in those meetings. And if you have any questions, do not hesitate to email me during the meeting. You can find my email on the website. My last name is atrocious. It's G. Kostyrko, G-K-O-S-T-Y-R-K-O, at waterboards.ca.gov. If you have any follow-up questions, please email me or call me, and I will try to get back to you in a timely manner. At this point, operator, we are done with the media availability. Thank you very much, all.